The invention of the incandescent lamp, abridged from Edison, His Life and Inventions by Frank Lewis Dyer and Thomas Comerford Martin. Up to the close of the 18th century, the means of house and street illumination were of two generic kinds, grease and oil. But then came a swift and revolutionary change in the adoption of gas. The ideas and methods of Murdoch and Lebon soon took definite shape, and coal smoke was piped from its place of origin to distant points of combustion. As early as 1804, the first company ever organized for gas lighting was formed in London, one side of Pall Mall being lit up by the enthusiastic pioneer Windsor in 1807. Equal activity was shown in America, and Baltimore began the practice of gas lighting in 1816. It is true that there were explosions, and distinguished men like Davy and Watt opined that the illuminant was too dangerous. But the spirit of coal had demonstrated its usefulness convincingly, and a commercial development began. Meantime, the wax candle and the argand oil lamp held their own bravely. The whaling fleets, long after gas came into use, were one of the greatest sources of our national wealth. To New Bedford, Massachusetts alone, some 300 or 400 ships brought their whale and sperm oil, spermaceti, and whalebone, and at one time that port was accounted the richest city in the United States in proportion to its population. The shipowners and refiners of that whaling metropolis were slow to believe that their monopoly could ever be threatened by newer sources of illumination. But gas had become available in the cities, and coal, oil, and petroleum were now added to the list of illuminating materials. Throughout the first half of the 19th century, the search for a practical electric light was almost wholly in the direction of employing methods analogous to those already familiar. In other words, obtaining the illumination from the actual combustion of the light-giving material. In the third quarter of the century, these methods were brought to practicality. But all may be referred back to the brilliant demonstrations of Sir Humphry Davy at the Royal Institution, circa 1909-10, when, with the current from a battery of 2,000 cells, he produced an intense voltaic arc between the points of consuming sticks of charcoal. For more than 30 years, the arc light remained an expensive laboratory experiment. But the coming of the dynamo placed that illuminant on a commercial basis. The mere fact that electrical energy from the least expensive chemical battery, using up zinc and acids, cost 20 times as much as that from a dynamo driven by a steam engine, is in of itself enough to explain why so many of the electric arts lingered in embryo after their fundamental principles had been discovered. Here is seen also further proof of the great truth that one invention often waits for another. From 1850 onward, the improvements in both the arc lamp and the dynamo were rapid, and under the superintendence of the great Faraday in 1858, protecting beams of intense electric light from the voltaic arc were shed over the waters of the Straits of Dover from the beacons of South Foreland and Dungeness. Thus the new era had been ushered in, but it was based altogether on the consumption of some material, carbon, in a lamp open to the air. Every lamp the world had ever known did this in one way or another. Edison himself began at that point, and his notebooks show that he made various experiments with this type of lamp at a very early stage. He was convinced, however, that the greatest field of lighting lay in the illumination of houses and other comparatively enclosed areas to replace the ordinary gas light, rather than in the illumination of streets and other outdoor places by lights of great volume and brilliancy. Dismissing from his mind quickly the commercial impossibility of using arc lights for general indoor illumination, he arrived at the conclusion that an electric lamp giving light by incandescence was the solution of the problem. In order that the reader may grasp an adequate idea of the magnitude and importance of Edison's invention of the incandescent lamp, it will be necessary to review briefly the state of the art at the time he began his experiments on that line. After the invention of the voltaic battery early in the last century, experiments were made which determined that heat could be produced by the passage of electric current through wires of platinum and other metals, and through pieces of carbon, as noted already. And it was, of course, also observed that if sufficient current were passed through these conductors, they could be brought from a lower stage of redness up to the brilliant white heat of incandescence. As early as 1845, the results of these experiments were taken advantage of when Starr, a talented American who died at the early age of 25, suggested in his English patent of that year two forms of small incandescent electric lamps, one having a burner made from platinum foil placed under a glass cover without excluding the air, and the other composed of a thin plate or pencil of carbon enclosed in a Torsellian vacuum. These suggestions of young Starr were followed by many other experimenters, whose improvements consisted principally in devices to increase the compactness and portability of the lamp, in the sealing of the lamp chamber to prevent the admission of air, and in means for renewing the carbon burner when it had been consumed. Thus Roberts, in 1852, proposed to cement the neck of the glass globe into a metallic cup and to provide it with a tube or stopcock for exhaustion by means of a hand pump. Other inventors between 1872 and 1877 proposed various ingenious devices for perfecting the joint between the metal base and the glass globe, and also providing their lamps with several short carbon pencils which were automatically brought into circuit successively as the pencils were consumed. In 1876 or 1877, Boulenguin proposed the employment of a long carbon pencil, a short section only of which was in circuit at any one time and formed the burner, the lamp being provided with a mechanism for automatically pushing other sections of the pencil into position between the contacts to renew the burner. Sawyer and Mann proposed in 1878 to make the bottom plate of glass instead of metal, and provided ingenious arrangements for charging the lamp chamber with an atmosphere of pure nitrogen gas, which does not support combustion. These lamps, and many others of similar character, ingenious as they were, failed to become of any commercial value due, among other things, to the brief life of the carbon burner. Even under the best of conditions, it was found that the carbon members were subject to a rapid disintegration or evaporation, which experimenters assumed was due to the disrupting action of the electric current, and hence the conclusion that carbon contained in itself the elements of its own destruction and was not a suitable material for the burner of an incandescent lamp. On the other hand, platinum, although found to be the best of all materials for the purpose, aside from its great expense, and not combining with oxygen at high temperature as does carbon, required to be brought so near the melting point in order to give light that a very slight increase in the temperature resulted in its destruction. It was assumed that the difficulty lay in the material of the burner itself and not in its environment. It was not realized up to a comparatively recent date as 1879 that the solution of the great problem of subdivision of the electric current would not, however, be found merely in the production of a durable incandescent electric lamp, even if any of the lamps above referred to had fulfilled that requirement. The other principal features necessary to subdivide the electric current successfully were the burning of an indefinite number of lights on the same circuit, each light to give a useful and economical degree of illumination, and each light to be independent of all the others in regard to its operation and extinguishment. Edison, whose earlier work in electric lighting, about 1878, had been announced in this country and abroad, and who had then stated boldly his conviction of the practicality of the subdivision of the electrical current. The eminent scientist John Tyndall delivered a lecture before the Royal Institution on the electric light. When, after pointing out the development of the art up to Edison's work, and showing the apparent hopelessness of the problem, he said, "Knowing something of the intricacy of the practical problem, I should certainly prefer seeing it in Edison's hands to having it in mine." 1877 in Edison's laboratory was a veritable carbon year, for it was carbon in some shape or form for interpolation in electric circuits of various kinds that occupied the thoughts of the whole force from morning to night. It was not surprising, therefore, that in September of that year, when Edison turned his thoughts actively toward electric lighting by incandescence, his early experiments should be in the line of carbon as an illuminance. His originality of method was displayed at the very outset, for one of the first experiments was the bringing to incandescence of a strip of carbon in the open air to ascertain merely how much current was required. This conductor was a strip of carbonized paper about an inch long, 1/16 of an inch broad, and 6 or 7 1/1000ths of an inch thick, the ends of which were secured to clamps that formed the poles of a battery. The carbon was lighted up to incandescence and, of course, oxidized and disintegrated immediately. Within a few days, this was followed up by experiments with the same kind of carbon, but in vacuo by means of a hand-worked air pump. This time, the carbon strip burned at incandescence for about 8 minutes. Various expedients to prevent oxidation were tried, such, for instance, as coating the carbon with a powdered glass, which in melting would protect the carbon from the atmosphere, but without successful results. Edison was inclined to concur in the prevailing opinion as to the easy destructibility of carbon, but without actually settling the point in his mind, he laid aside temporarily this line of experiment and entered a new field. He had made previously some trials of platinum wire as an incandescent burner for a lamp, but left it for a time in favor of carbon. He now turned to the use of almost infusible metals, such as boron, ruthenium, chromium, etc., as separators or tiny bridges between two carbon points, the current acting so as to bring these separators to a high degree of incandescent, at which point they would emit a brilliant light. He also placed some of these refractory metals directly in the circuit, bringing them to incandescence, and using silicon in powdered form in glass tubes placed in the electric circuit. His notes include the use of powdered silicon mixed with lime or other very infusible non-conductors or semiconductors. Edison's conclusions on these substances were that while in some respect they were within bounds of possibility for the subdivision of the electric current, they did not reach the ideal that he had in mind for commercial results. Edison's systematized attacks on the problem were two in number, the first of which we have just related, which began in September 1877 and continued until January 1878. Edison says, "After my return from the trip to observe the eclipse of the sun, I met with Professor Barker, professor of physics at the University of Pennsylvania, and Dr. Chandler, professor of chemistry in Columbia College, to see Mr. Wallace, a large manufacturer of brass in Ansonia, Connecticut. Wallace at this time was experimenting on series arc lighting. Just at that time, I wanted to take up something new, and Professor Barker suggested that I go to work and see if I could subdivide the electric light so it could be got in small units like gas. This was not a new suggestion because I had made a number of experiments on electric lighting a year before this. They had been laid aside for the phonograph. I determined to take up the search again and continue it. On my return home, I started my usual course of collecting every kind of data about gas, bought all the transactions of the gas engineering societies, etc., all the back volumes of gas journals, etc. Having obtained all the data and investigated gas jet distribution in New York by actual observations, I made up my mind that the problem of the subdivision of the electric current could be solved and made commercial. About the end of August 1878, he began a second organized attack on the subdivision of the current, which was steadily maintained until he achieved signal victory a year and 2 months later. The date of this interesting visit to Ansonia is fixed by an inscription made by Edison on a glass goblet which he used. The legend in diamond scratches runs, "Thomas A. Edison, September 8, 1878, made under the electric light." Other members of the party left similar memorials, which under the circumstances have come to be greatly prized. A number of experiments were witnessed in arc lighting, and Edison secured a small Wallace Farmer dynamo for his own work, as well as a set of Wallace arc lamps for lighting the Menlo Park laboratory. Before leaving Ansonia, Edison remarked significantly, "Wallace, I believe I can beat you making electric lights. I don't think you're working in the right direction." Another date which shows how promptly the work was resumed is October 14, 1878, when Edison filed an application for his first lighting patent, "Improvement in Electric Lights." In after years, discussing the work of Wallace, who was not only a great pioneer electrical manufacturer, but one of the founders of the wire drawing and brass working industry, Edison said, "Wallace was one of the earliest pioneers in electrical matters in this country. He has done a great deal of good work for which others have received the credit, and the work which he did in the early days of electric lighting others have benefited by largely, and he has been crowded to one side and forgotten." Associated in all this work with Wallace at Ansonia was Professor Moses G. Farmer, famous for the introduction of the fire alarm system, as the discoverer of the self-exciting principle of the modern dynamo, as a pioneer experimenter in the electric railway field, as a telegraph engineer, and as a lecturer on mines and explosives to naval classes at Newport. During 1858, Farmer, who like Edison was a ceaseless investigator, had made a series of studies upon the production of light by electricity, and had even invented an automatic regulator by which a number of platinum lamps in multiple arc could be kept at uniform voltage for any length of time. In July 1859, he lit up one of the rooms of his house at Salem, Massachusetts, every evening with such lamps, using in them small pieces of platinum and iridium wire, which were made to incandesce by means of current from primary batteries. At the commencement of his new attempts, Edison returned to his experiments with carbon as an incandescent burner for a lamp, and made a very large number of trials all in vacuo. Not only were the ordinary strip paper carbons tried again, but tissue paper coated with tar and lamp black was rolled into thin sticks like knitting needles, carbonized and raised to incandescence in vacuo. Edison also tried hard carbon, wood carbons, and almost every conceivable variety of paper carbon in like manner. With the best vacuum that he could then get by means of an ordinary air pump, the carbons would last at the most from 10 to 15 minutes in a state of incandescence. If we consider a simple circuit in which a current is flowing, and include in the circuit a carbon horseshoe-like conductor, which it is desired to bring to incandescence by the heat generated by the current passing through it, it is first evident that the resistance offered to the current by the wires themselves must be less than that offered by the burner, because otherwise current would be wasted as heat in the conducting wires. At the very foundation of the electric lighting art is the essential commercial consideration that one cannot spend very much for conductors, and Edison determined that in order to use wires of a practical size, the voltage in the circuit, that is, the pressure or the characteristic that overcomes resistance to its flow, should be 110 volts, which since its adoption has been the standard. To use a lower voltage or pressure while making the solution of the lighting problem a simple one, as we shall see, would make it necessary to increase the size of the conducting wires to a prohibitive extent. To increase the voltage or pressure materially while permitting some savings in the cost of conductors would enormously increase the difficulties of making a sufficiently high-resistance conductor to secure light by incandescence. This apparently remote consideration, weight of copper used, was really the commercial key to the problem, just as the incandescent burner was the scientific key to that problem. Carbon as a material, determined after patient search, apparently offered the greatest hope. But even with this substance, the necessary high resistance could be obtained only by making the burner of extremely small cross-section, thereby also reducing its radiating surface. Therefore, the crucial point was the production of a hair-like carbon filament with a relatively great resistance and small radiating surface, capable of withstanding mechanical shock and susceptible of being maintained at a temperature of over 2,000 degrees for 1,000 hours or more before breaking. And this filamentary conductor required to be supported in a vacuum chamber so perfectly formed and constructed that during all those hours and subjected as it is to varying temperatures, not a particle of air should enter to disintegrate the filament. And not only so, but the lamp after its design must not be a mere laboratory possibility, but a practical commercial article capable of being manufactured at low cost and in large quantities. After having devoted several months to experimental trials of carbon, at the end of 1878, as already detailed, he turned his attention to the platinum group of metals and began a series of experiments in which he used chiefly platinum wire and iridium wire and alloys of refractory metals in the form of wire burners for incandescent lamps. These metals have a very high fusing point and were found to last longer than the carbon strips previously used when heated up to incandescence by the electric current, although under such conditions as were then possible, they were melted by excess of current after they had been lighted a comparatively short time, either in the open air or in such a vacuum as could be obtained by means of the ordinary air pump. Nevertheless, Edison continued along this line of experiments with unremitting vigor, making improvement after improvement, until about April 1879 he devised a means whereby platinum wire of a given length, which would melt in the open air when giving a light equal to 4 candles, would emit a light of 25 candle power without fusion. This was accomplished by introducing the platinum wire into an all-glass globe completely sealed and highly exhausted of air, and passing a current through the platinum wire while the vacuum was being made. In this, which was a new and radical invention, we see the first step toward the modern incandescent lamp. The knowledge thus obtained that current passing through the platinum during exhaustion would drive out occluded gases, that is, gases mechanically held in or upon the metal, and increase the infusibility of the platinum, led him to aim at securing greater perfection in the vacuum, on the theory that the higher the vacuum obtained, the higher would be the infusibility of the platinum burner. And this fact also was of the greatest importance in making successful the final use of carbon, because without the subjection of the carbon to the heating effect of current during the formation of the vacuum, the presence of the occluded gases would have been a fatal obstacle. Edison kept his laboratory going without cessation. A great variety of lamps was made of the platinum-iridium type, mostly with thermal devices to regulate the temperature of the burner and prevent its being melted by an excess of current. The study of apparatus for obtaining more perfect vacua was unceasingly carried on, for Edison realized that in this lay a potent factor of ultimate success. About August, he had obtained a pump that would produce a vacuum of up to 1/100,000th part of an atmosphere, and sometime during the next month or beginning of October had obtained one that would produce a vacuum of up to the 1/1,000,000th part of an atmosphere. It must be remembered that the conditions necessary for maintaining this high vacuum were only made possible by his invention of the one-piece all-glass globe, in which all the joints were hermetically sealed during its manufacture into a lamp, whereby a high vacuum could be retained continuously for any length of time. In obtaining this perfection of vacuum apparatus, Edison realized that he was approaching much nearer to a solution of the problem. In his experiments with the platinum-iridium lamps, he had been working all the time toward the proposition of high resistance and a small radiating surface until he had made a lamp having 30 feet of fine platinum wire wound upon a small bobbin of infusible material, but the desired economy, simplicity, and durability were not to be obtained in this manner, although at all times the burner was maintained at a critically high temperature. After attaining a high degree of perfection with these lamps, he recognized their impractical character, and his mind reverted to the opinion he had formed in his early experiments 2 years before, viz., that carbon had the requisite resistance to permit a very simple conductor to accomplish the object if it could be used in the form of a hair-like filament, provided the filament itself could be made sufficiently homogeneous. As we've already seen, he could not use carbon successfully in his earlier experiments, for the strips of carbon he then employed, although they were much larger than filaments, would not stand, but were consumed in a few minutes under the imperfect conditions then at his command. Now, however, he had found means for obtaining and maintaining high vacua. Edison immediately went back to carbon, which from the first he had conceived of as the ideal substance for a burner. His next step proved conclusively the correctness of his old deductions. On October 21, 1879, after many patient trials, he carbonized a piece of cotton sewing thread bent into a loop or horseshoe form, and had it sealed into a glass globe from which he exhausted the air until a vacuum of up to 1/1,000,000th of an atmosphere was produced. This lamp, when put on the circuit, lighted up brightly to incandescence and maintained its integrity for over 40 hours, and lo, the practical incandescent lamp was born. The impossible so-called had been attained. Subdivision of the electric light current was made practical. The goal had been reached, and one of the greatest inventions of the century was completed. Up to this time, Edison had spent over $40,000 in his electric light experiments, but the results far more than justified the expenditure, for with this lamp he had made the discovery that the filament of carbon, under the conditions of high vacuum, was commercially stable and would stand high temperatures without the disintegration and oxidation that took place in all previous attempts that he knew of for making an incandescent burner out of carbon. Besides, this lamp possessed the characteristics of high resistance and small radiating surface, permitting economy in the outlay for conductors and requiring only a small current for each unit of light, conditions that were absolutely necessary of fulfillment in order to accomplish commercially the subdivision of the electric light current. No sooner had the truth of this new principle been established than the work to establish it firmly and commercially was carried on more assiduously than ever. The next immediate step was a further investigation of the possibilities of improving the quality of the carbon filament. Edison had previously made a number of experiments with carbonized paper for various electrical purposes, with such good results that he once more turned to it and now made fine filament-like loops of this material which were put into other lamps. This proved even more successful, commercially considered, than the carbonized thread, so much so that after a number of such lamps had been made and put through severe tests, the manufacture of lamps from these paper carbons was begun and carried on continuously. This necessitated first the devising and making of a large number of special tools for cutting the carbon filaments, and for making and putting together the various parts of the lamps. Meanwhile, great excitement had been caused in this country and in Europe by the announcement of Edison's success. In the old world, scientists generally still declared the impossibility of subdividing the electric light current, and in the public press, Mr. Edison was denounced as a dreamer. Between October 21, 1879, and December 21, 1879, some hundreds of these paper carbon lamps had been made and put into actual use, not only in the laboratory, but in the streets and several residences at Menlo Park, New Jersey, causing great excitement and bringing many visitors from far and near. On the latter date, a full-page article appeared in the New York Herald, which so intensified the excited feeling that Mr. Edison deemed it advisable to make a public exhibition. On New Year's Eve, 1879, special trains were run to Menlo Park by the Pennsylvania Railroad, and over 3,000 persons took advantage of the opportunity to go there and witness this demonstration for themselves. In this great crowd were many public officials and men of prominence in all walks of life who were enthusiastic in their praises. Edison began to carbonize everything in nature that he could lay hands on. In his laboratory notebooks are innumerable jottings of the things that were carbonized and tried, such as tissue paper, soft paper, all kinds of cardboards, drawing paper of all grades, paper saturated with tar, all kinds of threads, fish line, threads rubbed with tarred lamp black, fine threads plaited together in strands, cotton soaked in boiling tar, lamp wick, twine, tar, and lamp black mixed with a proportion of lime, vulcanized fiber, celluloid, boxwood, coconut hair and shell, spruce, hickory, baywood, cedar, and maple shavings, rosewood, punk, cork, bagging, flax, and a host of other things. He also extended his searches far into the realms of nature in the line of grasses, plants, canes, and similar products. And in these experiments at that time and later, he carbonized, made into lamps, and tested no fewer than 6,000 different species of vegetable growths. At this time, he was investigating everything with a microscope, and one day in the early part of 1880, he noticed upon a table in the laboratory an ordinary palm leaf fan. He picked it up and looked it over, observing that it had a binding rim made of bamboo, cut from the outer edge of the cane, a very long strip. He examined this and gave it to one of his assistants, telling him to cut it up and get out of it all the filaments he could carbonize and put them into lamps and try them. The results of this trial were exceedingly successful, far better than anything else thus far used, indeed so much so that after further experiments and microscopic examinations, Edison was convinced that he was now on the right track for making a thoroughly stable commercial lamp, and shortly afterward, he sent a man to Japan to procure further supplies of bamboo.